Welcome, I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Common Core is this new set of guidelines for curriculum and testing for K-12 schools endorsed by the Obama administration, and it's being implemented by 45 states across the country, including California. Now, if you're someone who's involved in the public schools on a day-to-day basis as a teacher or administrator, I'm sure that you have learned a lot about Common Core in the past year. And if you are a parent, you've probably at least heard about it, although you may not fully understand what it is or how it's affecting classroom teaching, let alone the tests that students take. Common Core's mission is to prepare more students for colleges and careers by focusing on math and English. And it's also aimed at creating a new testing regime that will measure critical thinking and allow the U.S. to more effectively compare its results with those in other countries. Now, this is a program that has drawn fire from some public school advocates like Diane Ravitch, who sees it as the next step in a kind of top-down, high-stakes testing approach to education that puts more demands on teachers without giving them resources to succeed. But right now, it's also the focus of a campaign by right-wing groups like the Koch brothers-backed FreedomWorks, who see the mobilization against Common Core as a stepping stone toward their broader agenda of private school vouchers and ending teacher tenure. Undoubtedly, there is going to be a lot of discussion and debate around Common Core in 2014, and I hope that this hour can be an opportunity for you to raise questions, to learn more about this, so that we can all take part in a more educated debate that's going to be emerging in 2014. If you're someone who has experiences with Common Core, if you have questions, whether you're a parent or someone who's just concerned about public education, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You're also welcome to send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org or to go to our website, yourcallradio.org, where you can leave a comment. We will be reading those on the air. I'm joined today by a couple of folks who've paid very close attention to Common Core. With me here in studio is Teresa Harrington. She's an education reporter for the Contra Costa Times. She has covered the rollout of the Common Core curriculum in California public schools. It's good to have you with us, Teresa.
Thank you.
And also with us on the line is Deborah Brown. She is the Director of Education Policy at Children Now. That's a nonprofit that advocates for funding for children's health and education, for making children a priority in our legislative process. So, Deborah, great to have you with us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So let's start talking, Teresa, about what actually Common Core is. Tell us the basic idea. If someone was trying to say, oh, here's the elevator pitch for why the Common Core, you know, what it is and what it's supposed to do, how would you do it?
Basically, Common Core is a set of standards for what students are supposed to know and be able to do at certain grade levels. It's actually not a curriculum. And even though you said it's endorsed by the Obama administration, it was not developed by the Obama administration. It was developed by a consortium of governors who came together in 2008. And it was basically spurred by the fact that California students are doing so poorly compared to others around the world, and also by business leaders realizing that the country was not producing graduates who are capable of doing the kinds of high-tech jobs that they need them to be able to fill here in this country.
Okay, so explain that to us. It's not a curriculum. These terms, you know, for people who are not in education, sometimes they can be kind of we can be loose about those terms. What's the difference, and what does it prescribe?
Well, it prescribes that students should be able to have certain skills. Like I observed a class at Montalvin Elementary in the West Contra Costa School District where the teacher was trying to get students to be able to persevere through and to continue to try to solve a problem. And so that's not a curriculum per se. That's more of a skill and something that's students need to be able to develop, because one of the things when I was talking to the principal there, she said a lot of American students are very used to being able to come up with the answer immediately, and they don't want to have to think. And if they have to struggle, they feel like they're a failure. And the whole idea of Common Core is that struggling is okay. And this teacher, she had a sign in her classroom that said learning is through mistakes. And she told the class, those of you who are confused right now are going to learn the most. And so it gives students the sense that it's okay to be confused and it's okay to ask questions, and they work together to solve problems often. There's this saying in the education world that it's no longer the sage on the stage, where there's the teacher up at the front of the class telling the kids, here's what you need to know. It's more the teacher's the facilitator of information. They present information, then the kids break into small groups and discuss it and report back to the teacher. And there's a lot more critical thinking. And then in terms of math, there's a lot more problem solving and the idea that there's more than one way to solve a problem, and not just memorizing your multiplication tables, but being able to show how you did your work. So be able to draw diagrams showing, you know, what 6 times 6 actually means and how you can figure that out through critical thinking.
So later in the hour, we're actually going to be joined by Jim Ryan, who is helping roll out science and technology and math, the Common Core, in those areas in the San Francisco schools. Deborah Brown, I want to turn to you with children now. You all have advocated for the Common Core. We heard some description there from Teresa about what this might actually mean in a classroom. I'm interested a little bit in that background of how Common Core emerged. You know, especially I think a lot of people right now, thinking of national educational reform, we think of No Child Left Behind, a lot of criticisms of that. Give us a little of that background of how Common Core relates to that, and then maybe we talk about how we got to where we are now and how teachers are learning about what this is supposed to be.
Sure, yeah, and I think Teresa hinted at it a bit, which is that there was some concern that our students weren't able to compete in this new global economy. So this idea of being able to be ready for college and career in a 21st century environment, that the skills that they were learning in the classroom weren't preparing them for that. And so, groups of folks got together, and so with the help of the National Governors Association and the council and the chief state school officers, they came together and they began to develop these standards to address those concerns. So this idea of critical thinking that students weren't able to do because they were really just looking at that being able to recite what the answers were. And so they really formed and began talking to experts throughout the country and throughout the world and looked at state standards. So standards in other states that are very high, such as California, and building upon those and really trying to transition from where those standards were and where they felt short in terms of helping students meet the goals that they should be meeting, and really began to develop those. And then states began to adopt those on their own over the last couple of years. And so, for example, California in 2010 adopted those standards and then have begun implementing them. And so that's been happening. I think 45 states have adopted the standards, and so it's been rolling out gradually across the country at different levels, because it really is something that states are deciding to do, and they're choosing to decide their implementation path.
Yeah, so there's a lot of it's one of the things really interesting reading about this. I think that there's a lot of people who think of this as, oh, it's, you know, as we say, Obama administration endorsed, and certainly there's been some money put behind it, or at least to encourage states to participate from the federal government. But at the same time, there's a lot of variation at the local level. I mean, I'm curious, Teresa, what you're seeing in terms of how different districts, let alone different administrators at the school level, are putting these programs into place.
Well, one interesting thing about the Obama administration is they actually are threatening to withhold federal funding from California because of the state's decision to suspend STAR testing and just do this pilot testing instead of the Common Core.
And explain why the state has done that, because I think, I mean, the testing is a big part of this, and I definitely want to get into it. Why has the state decided to suspend the reporting? The kids will still take the test, right, but suspend reporting of the STAR test.
Right, because they're saying this is a test of the test. It's computer-based, which is new, and they want to be able to sort of work the kinks out, and so they're afraid, basically, that if they report the scores, they might not really accurately reflect students' knowledge, because there could still be some kinks in the tests. Also, I think they do expect the test scores to go down because this is going to be more rigorous. It's going to be new. Pretty much any time you switch to a new test, the test scores go down. And so I think they're trying to get the public to prepare for that, basically.
And so that California has California asked for a waiver from the federal government? Is that how it works?
Yes, and the federal government has not granted that waiver. And in fact, the federal government has, as I said, threatened to withhold funding. But there are talks going on continuously between the State Department of Education and the U.S. Department of Education. And I talked to State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Torlakson about this, and he's optimistic, and he's very adamant that, you know, this is the right thing. He said I didn't want to waste another moment or spend another dime on testing that wasn't relevant to what we're teaching, and we're moving forward with the Common Core, and he felt like that would be, you know, keeping a step backwards if you were still using the old tests, basically.
Actually, I want to ask Deborah Brown. So first, talk about what will testing look like when the Common Core is fully implemented, and then what do you think about this decision here in California to try not to report the old tests this year?
Sure. So the old way of testing was all, you know, Scantron. So it was fill in the bubble test, and then, you know, at certain grade level, students did have essays. But the shift now will be in that the students will take the tests on technology based. So they'll be using computers and tablets to be able to take the test, and so they will have, I think, the greater opportunity to look at visuals and answer questions that are more visually oriented, as well as more reading and videos, and be able to answer questions that way. But then also that the test will be performance based. So students will be asked to sort of analyze and provide deeper levels of information. So this idea that, you know, more open ended questions, there'll be a greater ability to provide those questions, and then the test will also be adaptive, which means that the next question will be based on the answer of the previous question. So it will give a better sense of how well students are doing in understanding what the standards are. And so rather than all questions being the same and being a progression, if a student is advanced, it can skip ahead. And if a student is struggling, it might sort of try to hone in a little deeper by being able to adapt. And that's ultimately what the tests are supposed to look like. Once the tests go in full implementation in the next school year, so spring of 2015, districts will have a few years where students can still take a sort of that old paper and pencil version of the test, but then ultimately all will be computer adaptive. So adaptive and technology based, and we should get better information about student performance and also student progress over time. So being able to look at year to year growth will be much better under the new system.
This is Deborah Brown. She's the Director of Education Policy at Children Now. Also with us today on Your Call is Teresa Harrington, an education reporter for the Contra Costa Times. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We're talking about the rollout of Common Core here in California and across the country. If you are someone, whether as a parent or as an educator, who has gotten a lot more about Common Core in the last 6 months or a year, give us a call. Join us with your experiences, your ideas, your reactions. 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. And we are also starting to hear kind of a burbling, more politicized conversation about Common Core that I think in this year is going to be here. We're going to be hearing a lot more about. And there's critics from the left and the right of Common Core. So if you have questions, this is a great opportunity to get them answered. If you're hearing different things about Common Core and want to know, hey, what's the truth of it? What do I need to understand? This is an opportunity. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or go to our website, yourcallradio.org, and leave a comment there. I actually want to bring a listener into the conversation, Julie in Kensington. Julie, good to have you with us.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
You know, I'm listening to this conversation about Common Core. I have a daughter who's at Portola Middle School in West Contra Costa Unified School District. We've talked about Common Core. And what I feel like is this is just like another Band-Aid. You know, she is in an enormous classroom. Teachers do not have time to spend with these kids. And you're talking about Common Core, we're going to get these kids to persevere and solve problems. But if they can't get any help solving the problem, it seems ridiculous. And the sad thing is that right now, I'm on my way to interview a private school. I'm pulling my daughter out. And it breaks my heart because I'm a big supporter of public schools. But, you know, just expecting I just don't know what Common Core is actually going to do to solve the problems of enormous classrooms. My daughter right now is in a Spanish class that doesn't have a Spanish teacher. Hmm. They have a substitute who's been there for months who doesn't speak Spanish.
Hey, Julie, hold on for a moment. I want to get response from our guest, and I hope you'll stay with us. Teresa, you've been out talking to teachers and administrators. Talk about what you're hearing. Mm-hmm.
And I do actually cover the West Contra Costa School District, so I do have some knowledge about that. You're right about the class size. Class size in California is huge, and that's a real difficult situation because in other states, they have much smaller class sizes. They have much greater per-student funding than California has. So to try to help give districts money to implement this, the state has dedicated $1.25 billion this year, and I know that State Superintendent Tom Torlakson wanted to try to get another $1.25 billion in the next budget, and that budget's about to be unveiled tomorrow, so we'll find out if that's in it or not. But the districts do have the opportunity to spend this money, which is about $200 per student, on professional development, technology, and instructional materials. Also, as you know, the state has changed the funding system for schools this year, and West Contra Costa is getting more money than some other districts because of the fact that it has a lot of low-income English learners. And I've talked to school board members there, and they are planning to use some of that money to lower class sizes, and they also have parcel tax money, and I think they may go out for another parcel tax to try to lower class sizes. I mean, they definitely recognize that that's a problem, and you're definitely right that if the teachers can't give the students the time that they need to help them problem solve, that's definitely going to be an issue.
So, I mean, actually, I want to turn this to you, Deborah. Well, in part, I guess I kind of think about teachers, all these reform efforts, ultimately it comes down to what they do in the classroom and what kind of resources and time they have to implement it. And, I mean, I just wonder, you know, whether there are good teachers out there who have been interactive, who have been letting the kids learn their way through problems, and they're like, oh, well, here's another set of things I'm expected to comply with that don't necessarily provide me more resources to do the work.
Right. No, I think that the caller raises a fundamental problem with our system that is beyond this conversation, but an important one that even the new funding formula didn't solve. It's great because it does provide more resources, particularly to districts that have higher need students, but it's that we severely underfund our schools. You know, if you look at sort of average funding, you know, and you look at it, California is, you know, sort of $8,400 per student, whereas the national average is over $11,000. So it really, that question really speaks to a broader question and fundamental question that we have to answer as a state about how much resources we want to put into our schools and how we want to allocate those. So that's kind of a broader question that we need to get, that this isn't going to solve, but hopefully this idea that we are in a significant transition, and so it's being mindful of that as a transition, and I say that because we are moving to a different funding system that gives districts much, much greater control over how they're going to spend those dollars, and so if it is really decreasing class sizes across the board or putting more support and dollars into professional development or technology or greater supports for the classroom, districts have that option and that flexibility to do that under the new system, and certainly as we fully fund that system. But then Common Core represents a transition, and then as we sort of talked about, the testing system represents a transition.
Well, Deborah, I want to talk a little bit about that transition process, and actually we have somebody on the line who's involved with this process here in the San Francisco Unified School District. His name's Jim Ryan. He's Executive Director of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math for the SFUSD, and he has been overseeing the rollout of Common Core. Jim, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Matt.
And so as you're coming into this conversation, and Julie, our caller, and Kenzie, new caller, talking about, hey, you know, there's already, we have under-resourced public schools, and then to have to go through this kind of transition and implement these programs, you know, this just stretches teachers, and I'm sure administrators as well, who are already working hard to just cope with the current situation. What's been your experience of that, and what have been some of the kind of concrete things you've done to try to make sure that this process can work in San Francisco?
Yeah, one of the highlights is as we work with the teachers and administrators in the schools, one of the things that they recognize is that part of what has stretched them in the past number of years is a broken system, and part of that broken system is a set of academic standards that don't really neither prepare the students for the world that's awaiting them, and don't engage them in a way where you can bring all students along. And that's one of the things that the Common Core standards actually helps us with is for instance in mathematics, they call for students to do some very rich mathematics, some mathematics in which students not only do the skill building that has historically been associated with those courses, but also the reasoning and the justification and the modeling with mathematics that brings more students into the fold and gives them and answers that question, when will I ever use this, before it gets asked by the students.
So Jim, make it real concrete for people. What would that look like in a lesson plan in a classroom?
In a classroom, that would mean that instead of students sitting in rows and doing worksheets in which the mathematics is what I commonly refer to as naked mathematics, where it's all numbers, symbols, and operations, that students are posed, a task might be that a teacher will ask students to go out and find data, for instance, on the weight of backpacks of their peers, and compare the weight of the backpacks of the peers against the age, and model that, graph that, chart it, model that information with an algebraic function. And so what you're talking about is a very rich task, fewer tasks rather than the more tasks, the skill building, but things in which students are innately interested. And therefore, the struggle that we have of keeping all students engaged in mathematics or sciences is reduced, because that is the essence of what our courses become.
And also, there's more of an emphasis on integrated curriculum. So, like you're saying, tying math to science, and sometimes tying English to social studies, so that there's more relevancy and kids see connections between what they're learning in one class and another class.
I want to ask you a quick question, Jim. In just a moment, we're going to have to go to a break. So if you can't get your complete thought here, we'll definitely pick it up afterwards. One of the questions that's been raised about Common Core is that it does really, what you're talking about is essentially kind of more of a word problem approach to math, where you'd be talking about, here's kind of a bit of a story, and let's try to figure out how numbers and mathematics help us understand that story. For English language learners, and here in California, that's almost a quarter of the student population, that seems like that would be really challenging.
It would be particularly challenging if all it ever is words on a page without the assistance for those students. But by bringing this word problem or this interactive or where the students are going out and collecting data and bringing it in the classroom, is it gives students many access points to the mathematics that we're asking the students to engage in. And if the students don't learn the academic language of mathematics and science in those courses, they're never going to learn it. So currently, We don't spend enough time with giving them the access to those through
Jim,
multiple representation.
Jim, hold that thought right there. We will come back. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar here on Your Call. We are talking about the rollout of Common Core, this important program that's affecting schools all around us. Please stay with us after the short break.
It's always better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, 866-798-TALK is the number to call, 866-798-8255. You can also send your question via email if you like to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, World Have Your Say from the BBC. Today, the debate over whether to extend euthanasia to children. Belgium legalized the right to euthanasia for adults in 2002, and now the Senate has voted to extend the law to children who are terminally ill and suffering unbearable physical pain. That's on The World Have Your Say from the BBC, coming up at 11.
Joining us now, I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow, it's our weekly media roundtable, where we're going to talk with journalists about coverage of the week's news, including the 50th anniversary of Lyndon Johnson's declaration of the war on poverty. On Monday, we're going to be talking about the state of Guantanamo today. And today, it's the Common Core, a mid-year report on this new set of standards for public schools across the country. 45 states involved. One of them is California. And we have with us three folks who know a lot about what's happening with Common Core. That's Teresa Harrington joining me here in studio. She's an education reporter for the Contra Costa Times. Also Deborah Brown, who's with Children Now, and Jim Ryan, Executive Director of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math for the San Francisco Unified School District, where he's overseeing the rollout of the new math and science standards in San Francisco. I want to come back to you, Jim, but I do want to invite callers. If you have questions, if you simply want to understand more about what Common Core means on the ground or its implications for the direction public education is taking nationally, the number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Is what you're hearing about what Common Core means for classroom teaching and also for testing in the schools something you think is positive? What questions do you have about it? Do you have criticisms? Are you concerned about the direction Common Core is taking us in? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jim, you were talking about what it means to put these standards into place when it comes to math teaching. You can go ahead. Sorry if I had to cut you off there for the break.
Yeah, it was just, we were speaking about English language learners.
Yeah.
One of the things that I I want to contrast to previous practices. Too often, previously, what it meant is that English language learners, the mathematics given to English language learners was devoid of language. Because they didn't want, there was a desire not to have the language get in the way of the math instruction. This, in this effort, we are acknowledging that there is a language to mathematics, and that language is very important for our language learners to ascertain. And so it is incumbent upon us as educators to give them that language during math instruction, and to structure our lessons and our units of study in such a way that all students actually have access to it.
I want to bring in Jennifer, who's calling from Larkspur. Jennifer, welcome to Your Call.
Hi. I have kids in the system, so I've kind of seen this play out this year. And I think, you know, generally the idea of Common Core seems great. But what seems to be suffering is what you've been talking about, which is this transition period. Because what I see is what the first speaker had talked about. There is no curriculum, and there's no curriculum in place. And what that has meant is that our kids are, in fact, sitting around doing worksheets. And instead, while the teachers are trying to figure out how to implement this. So maybe the last guest could comment on how that's actually going to play out. Because right now it feels like a lost year for our kids.
Maybe bring in Deborah Brown on that. How would you respond in terms of your children now? You all advocated for Common Core. I mean, has the rollout been good? Has it been an opportunity for it to succeed in this first year?
Well, so I want to clarify, I think, the point about the curriculum. I think that the message is that the Common Core is not a curriculum. It's the end result is what we want to do. Sort of the curriculum, that's what happens locally. So that's what the teachers are developing. So I think that's what...
Well, I guess what Jennifer is asking is, were the teachers at the local level given the opportunity to develop a curriculum on this kind of short timeline?
And so that's been rolling out very differently at all levels throughout the state, and that's important because that is not the curriculum isn't state driven; it is locally driven. And so obviously the hope is that this is a involved effort that the district engages teachers in and principals in, and that is done in a way that is very collaborative with teachers. That would certainly be the goal of how that's done. I can't speak to how any particular a district has done that, but that's how it's supposed to happen. And so teachers are supposed to be part of that process. And then it's also how they teach in the classrooms is also part of that.
Well, Teresa, let me ask you. I mean, one of the criticisms of Common Core has been that, and I mean, I understand different districts, different states are implementing this in different ways, but the actual development of the standards, some people say, you know, teachers weren't very involved in that process of developing those standards to begin with, and that may be some of the reason why they're not able to implement them at the pace that they're being asked to.
Yeah, actually, there was a report to the State Board of Education about implementation, and it said that only about half of the districts in the state, this was in November, had written a Common Core standard implementation plan, and only about 40% had been approved by the local board. So there's definitely a lag in some districts. About 80% of those that had responded to this survey had developed or selected a curriculum. So that means 20% still didn't even have a curriculum 2 months into the school year. So obviously this is a problem. And in West Contra Costa, Beth Levine, the teacher I watched, she was one of the mentor teachers who was helping to come up with lessons. But absolutely, teachers are having to build lessons from scratch, and there's a lot of scrambling going on out there for professional development, people looking for where are some lessons I can plug into my classroom.
Actually, I want to bring on, we've got a call from a classroom teacher in Salinas, Olivia. Welcome to your call. What's been your experience?
Well, first of all, I'm very excited about the Common Core. I think it's great. I'm just very excited. Now, the only problem is that my students, where 99% student body is Hispanic, and they're not used to the computers because they haven't been exposed to it. And that's what worries me, because these tests will be 100% computer-based. And the students, they don't have the resources at home or at school. I only have one computer in my classroom for my 32 students. Wow. And we only have 30 minutes a week to maybe 40 minutes a week for them to use the lab. So this is my concern. What's going to happen with these students that do not have access to computers because we don't have them and they haven't been exposed to them?
Olivia, thank you so much for your call from Salinas. And I'll turn that to you, Deborah Brown. This challenge of, I mean, are we threatening making these kids who are already working at a disadvantage basically make the digital divide work against them when it comes to being educated and taking tests?
Right. It is a challenge because it certainly is. It is an issue of equity that we do need to address. And the hope, I think, is that some of this Common Core money can help districts with that. Not only make sure that you have sufficient access to computers in the classroom or a computer lab, so that students can become more familiar with how to maneuver and manipulate around the computers, but also general keyboarding skills that students lack. And so that's where part of what's going to happen this first year, that will be a big thing that we will get more information and hopefully work towards. I just sort of keep emphasizing this idea of a transition period, and that's where you know certainly in the first year, you know, the students aren't going to be punished because of their need to build up their computing skills.
Yeah, one of the big criticisms of Common Core has been that this is going to require this big investment in educational technology, certainly some big corporations that are going to, you know, I mean, over $1 billion spent on iPads by the Los Angeles Unified School District. And a question of whether, I mean, obviously, if you've got to do your tests on computers, well, you're required to make that huge investment that may or may not serve these other, you know, may not be the most important investments to make. How would you respond to that? People say, why is that direction we're going in?
I think that that also gets to the equity issue, so that you're helping provide those students with that, with access to those computers and computing skills that they will need, again, to make them ready for the 21st century economy that they have to compete in. So to just not provide it to them is doing them a disservice as well. So if that gets more technology into the classroom, and hopefully it is also not just with the testing that's done, but also in the curriculum, and that it's integrated into their daily lives, they will become more familiar with it, and that they won't be at a disadvantage because they don't have access to it at home or have limited access to it at home. And so that's actually an advantage to moving forward on this. It's an investment in providing equity on that technology side.
I want to bring in Jim from Berkeley, who has called in. Jim, welcome to your call.
Hi. I'm a teacher, and Common Core has motivated me to join online called BAT, Badass Teachers, and we're in opposition to the Common Core. And one of the things that got me to call in was the curriculum person in math that was telling about how there was going to be this new change in the classroom, and that they're going to be able to talk about stuff and things like that. And that's just the opposite that we've had since implementation of NCLB. What we don't have is conversation. What we have is a focusing of time on passing tests. Some schools, the principal doesn't allow the children to get in costumes on Halloween,
Jim,
because the priority is test taking.
I want you to stay with us, but I want to kind of focus on this question. So, I mean, you're talking about No Child Left Behind and the emphasis it put on high stakes testing. And then, of course, now there's Common Core coming in, which in some ways, you came in some parts out of reaction to thinking, oh, No Child Left Behind went in a direction we didn't want to go. And I kind of like to go around the panel and say this question of No Child Left Behind, there's a lot of criticisms of it and the kind of push it put on for everyone to teach to tests, for administrators to feel like, gosh, if our test scores don't go up next year, I may lose my job. Where does Common Core fit into that? And does it move us in a different direction? And I just ask you to respond briefly and start with you, Jim Ryan.
I would say that it refines that the position that we're in. When we look at the released items that Smarter Balance Assessment Consortia, the high-stakes test that California will be implementing, you find much richer tasks in which students are not simply bubbling in multiple choice or true-false questions, but actually have constructed responses, have to justify their reasoning for their work. And with that, you change the dynamic of, if you're going to teach the test, at least it's a better test that we're now using to assess our schools.
Teresa Harrington.
Yeah, I agree with what he just said. And also, in terms of the standards, there are fewer standards now. And they used to always say that California standards were an inch wide and a mile deep, and there was just too much to cover, and it couldn't get covered well. And so now the idea is to slow down, focus on the key content issues that are the most important, and make sure your kids really understand them. And then, as you said, the test is testing what you want the kids to know. And so if you're teaching to the test, you're teaching what you're supposed to be teaching them, and it's not a bad thing.
Deborah Brown.
I would agree that you're assessing the higher level thinking skills under the Common Core assessments, and so it is a better test. And then the only other thing that I would add to that is that what NCLB is, it's, you know, sort of set in an accountability system that particularly what didn't measure growth, which is something that we want to look at rather than just how many students reach a certain target. This idea of measuring growth and how we do that in an accountability system, it is something that the state and then certainly the federal government has to grapple with and figure out, and we haven't done that. But the starting place is that we have a better test in place now.
So, Deborah, I want to come back to that question of accountability, but we still have Jim in Berkeley on the line. Jim, after hearing these folks, is it a better test? At least you're teaching to a better test?
It doesn't really matter. In the war on poverty, the actual war in Vietnam took place. So we had NCLB. We still have NCLB. That hasn't gone away. is still NCLB, it's still high stakes testing, but only you're going to have less money in the classroom. You're going to have to cut back because you're spending more money on computers and that sort of thing. It's the same thing that happened in the war on poverty. It's the Vietnam War sucked out the energy and money that that went towards the war on poverty. So it's a fantasy, and these people are just talking about something that, you know, each person has their own fantasy of how they're going to address the inequalities. It's not going to happen that way because the teacher has to have a class.
Jim, let me ask you before I let you go, real briefly.
Yes.
What would you do? Is that a matter of more money? Is that basically the? I'm asking what direction you want to see it going.
I would eliminate high stakes testing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does. It's not improving, and there's been, and also I wouldn't try something that hasn't been actually studied. This is all fantasy because nobody has implemented this. This isn't done in a thoughtful way where you go ahead and test it and see it has results. I mean, I have an opinion, they have an opinion, right. But that's what it is because there's no experience that we can look back on and evaluate what actually happened,
Jim,
which is jumping, spending billions.
Jim, I want to thank you so much for calling in and taking part in the conversation. If you'd like to join us here on Your Call, got about 10 minutes more to talk about Common Core, its principles, how it's playing out in classrooms, what it'll mean for testing, what it will mean for teachers, parents, students, and the future of public education. The number to call is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. I want to get back to both you and Jim, Deborah, talked about accountability. And I think if we No Child Left Behind, that kind of high stakes testing model still here, even as we've now switching to talk about Common Core. I mean, do you think that some of Jim's criticism of what high-stakes testing is done to public schools and the priorities that it has set is valid?
I think it's a question that has to be answered, but I think it's separate from this question because this idea of testing. So there's the idea of the standards, and then there's the assessments or the tests that measure student progress, and then there's an accountability system. And so to criticize Common Core because we have a accountability system at the federal level that needs to be reevaluated, I don't think it's a fair criticism of the Common Core standards.
So, I guess what I meant, just to kind of go for Jim about this, I mean, when it comes to education policy, we're lucky if we can hold one idea in our head as a country and talk about it. And this year, we're going to be talking about Common Core, right? So that will be where some of these issues will be raised. And somebody like Diane Ravitch, who's been a sharp critic of high-stakes testing, says this kind of takes the edge off, says you may have a little better test, but it doesn't really change those basic problems or give resources that teachers need.
Yeah, one of the...
Go ahead, Jim, if you want to jump in.
One of the things that we've seen over the past about 2-3 years now that the Common Core has been out, that's actually been refreshing, is that we've been able to talk about the Common Core standards. What's in them that redefines what counts as math, what we expect students to know in ELA, and that has been a very refreshing conversation. At a certain point, we know that the conversation will move from standards to the assessment. We'll be talking about the Smarter Balance assessment. But what's really nice right now is the conversation among the educators that we've been working with is around what does this mean? How have we redefined what counts as mathematics? How is it more rigorous now when we ask students to look for patterns and then justify those patterns in language as well as in mathematically? So the hope is that if an assessment also captures that conversation within a student, then we are so much further ahead than we were with the previous math standards and the previous CST exam.
That's Jim Ryan. He's Executive Director of STEM, Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math for the San Francisco Unified School District. He's overseeing the rollout of Common Core in Math and the next generation of science in the San Francisco schools. Also with us today are Teresa Harrington. She's the education reporter for the Contra Costa Times, and also Deborah Brown, who's with Children Now, which advocates for funding for education and health care for kids. I want to bring in Jane in San Francisco to the program. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, this is Jane. Thank you for taking my call. And I noticed you prefaced your show by talking about how most of the people that were against Common Core tend to be more right wingers. But I'm a lifelong Democrat.
I just want to say I did not. I said it's got critics on both sides. I just want to make that clear.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And sorry about that. Lifelong Democrat, and I'm also an educational psychologist and a parent. And I have a lot of concerns about the Common Core program. One, I feel like it is there was nothing really wrong with the standards we had in place before. The problems are really more social problems of kids not being ready for school. And I think that the effort should be addressed there instead of creating a whole program, on the national level to try to bring the standards into, one place. And the other thing is there's been a lot of talk by the administration about increasing stem cell proficiency and making, not just California, but all of the students in the United States more proficient and competitive worldwide. But, for instance, in the mathematics area, they removed the requirement for algebra. And I'm not able to see how that will help to make students more proficient in terms of mathematics.
Jane, this is Jim Ryan's area, so I want to give him a chance to respond to what you've had to say. Jim Ryan, go ahead.
So two points is, one, when we talk about students being ready to learn when they show up, one of the benefits that San Francisco has been able to take advantage of is with a core of other districts within California, we've received a waiver from NCLB, and that waiver allows us to look at other measures other than just the CST scores in evaluating how well we're doing. And part of that is part of what we've written in there is that we are trying to measure the social and emotional well-being of our students and the growth in that as they go through their years. And so that is something that we've just been given the waiver this fall, and we're getting our hands around that. But it's a recognition that we have as well as the caller. In terms of the movement of algebra or the reshuffling of content, historically, when we meant rigor in mathematics, rigor meant take something that was taught at a higher grade level and move it down to a younger grade level, and then that's called rigor. In the Common Core standards, what rigor is it's defined as that not only do students have the skills, the mathematical skills, but they have the conceptual understanding and they're able to apply the mathematics. And so if we say that students have to apply it in a context outside of just their math classroom, that is true rigor among our students. And so as we look at what is algebra as a course may not sit in the same grade level. That's yet to be determined by various districts. But algebra as a concept, as students learning that concept and being able to apply it, now starts in kindergarten. And we build that conceptual strand all the way through their high school years. So,
I have a daughter in first grade, and I noticed that, actually. I'm sorry to cut in there, Jim. I want to bring on a couple of folks before we close out the hour. Fred in Watsonville, I'd ask you just to be brief because we got a few other folks, and I want to be able to wrap up with our guests.
I just wanted to answer the question that wasn't answered before about what do you do instead if you ask almost any in-service teacher, they'll say what they need is time to collaborate with their peers and smaller class sizes. So all we have to do is increase the number of teachers, and we could solve all of these problems.
Fred, thank you so much for the thought. Let's go next to Molly in Carmel. Welcome, Marley.
Hi. I just wanted to say I think that we're delusional to think that we should. I just think it's crazy to send everything through to students and have them operating only with computers. The tangible world is a really crucial part of being a human being, and I am very distressed by this exclusivity of this very big industry that is just making money hand over fist, and the humanity gets lost.
Molly, thanks so much for the call. And before we wrap up here, James in Santa Cruz, if you could be brief, welcome to the show.
Yes, I just wanted to second what Fred said. I worked in the same school district as he, and I also think we're talking apples and oranges, because the foundation of the whole thing is the pedagogy that takes place in the classroom. When there's too many kids, you don't have enough time to deal with each child's unique individual situation, which often deals with socializing this child also, which is something that we forget about. And thank you so much for this great show.
Thank you so much, James, for the call. And we are down to about 1 minute to go here on the program. Deborah Brown, I'm going to let you have the final thought here. What's the last thing from your perspective you'd like to leave people with about Common Core?
I think what I'd like to say is looking at understanding the shifts that Common Core reflects for students, and that deeper level of thinking. But then I'd also just like to sort of build upon the last couple conversations about accountability. I think that's the next conversation that we need to have at the state level, and we need to look at multiple measures beyond just test scores. But test scores certainly are important, and that is what the state is looking at now, and it's going to take some time for them to figure it out, but it is important to address all those other things.
Deborah, I'm hoping we can have you back for that conversation. That's Deborah Brown, Director of Education Policy at Children Now. Also with us for this hour, where we've been talking about Common Core, Teresa Harrington, education reporter of the Contra Costa Times. Thanks so much for being here, Teresa.
Thank you.
And also Jim Ryan, who is overseeing the rollout of Common Core in math and science in the San Francisco Unified School District. Thank you so much, Jim, for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call. Thanks for listening. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll talk about coverage of the 50th anniversary of Lyndon Johnson's War on Poverty. We'll be joined by Sasha Abramski, author of The American Way of Poverty, and we'll also speak with Greg Kaufman, who covered poverty for The Nation magazine. We'll also discuss the latest news from Egypt with Jadalia's Adel Iskander. Where did you see the best reporting this week? Join the conversation on Your Call with Maliha Razazan and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Maliha Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.